It is Friday, November 1st, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, begins its 2013-2014 season under the baton of music director Paul Haas at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, November 16th at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. This opening concert will include Barber's Adagio for strings, Schubert's Symphony No. 9, and Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 5, featuring British pianist Simon Mulligan. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
Ahead on Ozarks, documenting the lives of the unjustly convicted, Antoinette talks to Megan Garner with the 1 for 10 Project.
But first, a program will award designated hospitals money to help cover the costs of connecting their electronic health record systems with the statewide health information exchange. Ray Scott, the director of the Arkansas Office of Health Information Technology, says this will allow facilities to share important information.
It's not that we're not collecting that information, it's that it's kind of siloed. So wherever you go to get care, that physician or facility may do a great job of capturing that data, but it usually stays right there with that practice, with that healthcare location. What SHARE is about, it's a health information exchange, so think of it as a health information utility that will actually allow your clinical information to follow you from one point of care to the next.
Scott says grants of up to $10,000 per facility will be awarded to 18 hospitals. He says it will not totally offset the cost, but it will make a huge difference in terms of hospitals' ability to connect to and use the Share Connectivity program.
The 10-year-old Fayetteville Transportation Plan could soon have an update if the City Council next week agrees to fund such an update. Peter Nyergarden, the city's Director of Sustainability and Strategic Planning, says that while the specific narrow scope items of the transportation plan have yet to be set by the City Council's Transportation Committee, a few broader goals for the plan are already clear.
Our overarching goals will be to try and align our transportation vision for the future, or our blueprint for the city, with the city's land use goals as they're expressed in City Plan 2030, to develop a master transportation plan that helps provide guidance to Ozark Regional Transit and Razorback Transit to prioritize future capital improvement expenditures, so future projects, whether they're road improvement projects, road widening projects, new roads, improvements to existing roads. Basically, how do we want to spend capital dollars and bond dollars.
With the city's trails network and an increased emphasis on investing in sidewalk construction, Nyergarden says Fayetteville is already aligning itself with shifts in transportation, but the new transportation plan, if given the green light by the City Council Tuesday, would include the development of a policy for complete streets, or streets that are designed with automobiles, bicycles, and pedestrians in mind. The plan would cost between $250,000 and $500,000 and wouldn't be complete until late next year.
Public input has been extended on an environmental assessment for a proposed development project for Lost Valley at the Buffalo National River. The environmental assessment is being conducted to evaluate potential impacts to the natural, cultural, and human environment from construction related to the proposed improvements at Lost Valley. And in light of the partial shutdown of the federal government last month, the review period for the environmental assessment has been extended to November 15th. Comments may be submitted online or in person at the Buffalo National River office in Harrison.
Ongoing construction of the 71B flyover will create a few closures in North Fayetteville next week. The eastbound shoulder of the Fulbright Expressway will be closed from Monday through Friday to allow for the installation of the bridge overhang decking on the flyover bridge. Additionally, one travel lane and the shoulder on southbound College Avenue, as well as the westbound shoulder of the Fulbright Expressway, will be closed from Tuesday through Friday between the hours of 8 p.m. and 6 a.m.
Last night, the Razorback soccer team finished the regular season with a 2-1 win in overtime at home against Missouri. The winning goal was scored by sophomore Lindsay Mayo with just 55 seconds left on the clock. With the win, the Razorbacks are 12-7 on the season and 5-6 in Southeastern Conference play, and the team moves on to the SEC tournament for the second consecutive year. The tournament starts Monday when the Razorbacks will again face Missouri in the first round.
And earlier today, the Razorback men's and women's cross-country team showed strong performances in the SEC championships. Both teams finished with runners filling out the top three places. Today's win marks the fourth consecutive SEC title and 21st conference title in program history for the men's team, the 14th title in program history for the women's team.
Mostly clear tonight with lows from 35 in northwest Arkansas to 44 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny skies tomorrow with highs from 56 in northwest Arkansas to 63 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, expect clear skies with lows from 31 in northwest Arkansas to 38 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone for this first day of November is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, and more for the area. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And, you know, it always sounds better when you say it's the first day of something, or it's the first, rather than here we are on the final Friday of the month.
There you go. It's a much more positive sort of, yes. Yeah, the whole month of November is ahead of us.
Good
or bad. Whatever you want to accomplish in November, you've got 30 days to do it.
Yep.
I tell you something that has been accomplished in just the last few days, and that is a new contract between the Teamsters and Arkansas Best.
Finally. I'm sure there's probably banners hanging up at Arkansas Best corporate headquarters in Fort Smith that just say finally, and probably everybody knows what that means. But yes, a new 5-year labor agreement. Arkansas Best, the primary subsidiary of Arkansas Best is ABF Freight. It's one of the nation's largest less than truckload carriers, and roughly 7,500 employees are members of the Teamsters, and those are most of those are drivers, but there's some dock workers and office and that type of thing. But this it's been a bitter negotiation. I mean, ABF or Arkansas Best and Teamsters are still engaged in a lawsuit, but the original contract expired March 31st. They've been working this out. The Teamsters approved it June 27th after several rounds. And now, after some supplemental votes took place, a little over 4 months later, they've now ratified this new 5-year contract. Why that's important is that it will save Arkansas Best a lot of money. You know, the company if it doesn't turn a profit this year, this will be 3 consecutive years of losses. So they're needing some savings. The contract comes with about a 7% wage reduction up front, but then that's built back in and it's recovered by the 5th year of the contract. But more importantly, possibly it allows the company to negotiate and implement some flexibility in its work schedules, because as anyone knows, you know, freight and shipping and those kind of things, you can't just build them into, okay, at 11:30 it's here, and then at 12:30 it's here. So it gives Arkansas Best a little bit of flexibility in terms of its regional model, its delivery models, and those type of things.
The day before yesterday, division managers of Walmart were together in northwest Arkansas talking about the company and the future of the company, and they admit they're kind of scratching their head over what the consumer will do next.
Well, they are, and they're not only what the consumer will do next, but what they're, you know, are they going to be spending and how much are they going to be spending and what will they be spending on? And it was interesting, they talked about some of their competitive fears, and not fear in a, oh gosh, we're cowering in a corner scared, but kind of a healthy fear of, you know, yeah, we're on top of the retail world, but we're always looking over our shoulder as well. And, you know, I can't imagine working in that high-pressure environment all the time. But, you know, for those folks who do, those merchandising managers, you know, it's quite a – you know, every day you have to wonder, okay, what's – it's not only what the Kroger, what the brick-and-mortar folks are doing, but what's Amazon doing? And you know, what are some of these technology companies doing – to work with manufacturers to bring the product straight from the manufacturer to the consumer, completely skipping the retail chain. So if you think about all of those, not only the uncertainty with the consumer, but the change, the constant change, and the frequent innovation that takes place in how products and, frankly, services get to consumers, sometimes I wonder how these folks sleep at night.
Also with Walmart, an announcement of some new jobs in South Carolina and Georgia.
Right. This is part of the, you know, the onshoring effort Walmart announced earlier this year, where they've agreed to work with companies to buy $50 billion in U.S.-made goods in the next 10 years. And, you know, one of those – so as part of this, Walmart is supporting to bring manufacturing back. One of the ways they do that is – you know, Kyle, if you'll make a certain number of widgets for me. And if you'll do it here in the U.S., I'll, instead of just guaranteeing you a one-year contract, I'll guarantee you a three-year contract. So they're doing some of those things. And, you know, Redman, the toy manufacturer that recently announced moving operations to Rogers, that's part of this. And now we have three companies. They make glassware, shoes, and I forgot what else. But, yeah, they're going to move probably just short of 400 jobs to operations in Georgia, South Carolina, and Pennsylvania. That was announced yesterday. So it's a start. It's a help. But, you know, it's going to take more than just Walmart to help restore manufacturing employment in the U.S. Just for perspective, U.S. manufacturing employment typically ranged for decades between 19 million and 17 million jobs, and it fell below 12 million in May 2009 and has remained there. And in Arkansas, we have about 155,000 manufacturing jobs, and that's down 37% from a high of 247,000 in February of 95. So this is good news, but from you know, perspective, it's going to take a while to get manufacturing back to where it was, if we ever do, in the U.S. and in Arkansas.
Do you think this is the sort of thing, since Walmart, which is the retail leader in the world, is doing more onshoring, that other brick-and-mortars chains will follow suit? Could this have an influence on them?
Well, I think it will indirectly, and Walmart has challenged the rest of the retail world to do the same. And not only will they do the same, but I think there are some factors coming into play that is just going to make it economically good sense for these companies. A couple of those factors are just shipping cost, getting goods here, and also labor. Labor is equalized in terms of what it costs, in terms of labor cost, have equalized to some extent. So that labor gap between U.S. workers and workers in China or elsewhere is not as pronounced. So that widget that was more efficient to make in China and ship over here, now it's not as efficient. It's not as the margin is not there because the labor cost gap is narrowed.
And finally, we had a month where three polls, major polls, came out about Arkansas and Arkansas politics. You had the Arkansas poll based at the University of Arkansas. You had the Talk Business Hendricks College poll. Then another one that came out from Little Rock, the Impact Management Group. We're now within a year, really, give or take a few days, of the 2014 election. What should we make of these three polls? And given that we still have 12 months before Election Day, should we make much of them?
Well, yes and no is the answer. And how's that for a good political?
You should be running for office there.
We've had some interesting feedback on the polls. And the Impact Management Group poll, they conducted that and provided it exclusively to the CityWire. And what the good thing about having these three polls within relatively narrow time frame is that it gives us a good snapshot in time, and that's what I would encourage folks to think about. We're not saying this is how the race is going to end up. This, right. We're creating a baseline, and then as we do these every quarter or every so often, you can see how the candidates move in terms of, you know, how much money they've spent, did it move the needle. So, again, I encourage folks, this is just a snapshot in time. This is what our Kansans thought at this time. The thing to take away, or the thing that at least that I took away, both with, because it showed on the two key races between Asa Hutchinson and Mike Ross for governor and Tom Cotton and Senator Pryor for the U.S. Senate seat, is that those races are very close. But the more interesting thing is that the number of undecided and the independent makeup. And for Republicans, that's good news. For Democrats, not so much, because clearly, in these three polls, you see independents, sometimes by wide margins, leaning Republican or leaning conservative. So the Democrats are really going to have to go after those independents to move the needle in their direction.
And just how will they do that? Do you have any idea?
Well, money, number one.
Okay.
Money is the grease that keeps the wheels moving in politics, or keeps the engine moving in politics. So, yeah, they're going to have to spend a lot of money target them with messaging, and I'm sure these campaigns. I mean, I don't have to tell you, they're more sophisticated now than they've ever been. think they get more sophisticated with every cycle. So I'm sure they're focus grouping the heck out of these folks to see what, you know, what gets them to respond, and that's how they're going to spend money to try to target those folks.
And so we have 12 months to go.
Yes, so buckle up.
All right. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, and more. Thank you, Michael.
All right, have a good weekend.
I'm Bob Garfield. On this week's On the Media, one of the nation's biggest credit bureaus unwittingly sold a vast trove of people's financial information to an identity thief. It's 2013. Do you know where your data are?
All of the information that makes up who you are, it's all for sale, either by these data brokers or by crooks who are running types of identity theft services.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Tune in Sunday at 11 a.m. to hear On the Media here on KUAF.
According to the American Civil Liberties Union's website, for every 10 people executed in the United States, at least one is exonerated and released from death row after being wrongfully convicted. It's this statistic that inspired Will Francombe and Mark Pizzi, two London-based filmmakers, to create the One for Ten Project. The project is a series of short 5 to 6 minute documentaries that profile 10 death row exonerees. The only U.S.-based member of the team is producer Megan Garner. The University of Arkansas graduate is currently working as a multimedia producer at Education Week in Washington, D.C., but she came to the project while working on her master's degree at the University of Miami. During her research, she came across statistics that show Florida has the second largest death row in the nation, and the state leads the nation in death row exonerees. These two facts stuck with Megan, and she thought taken together, they were fairly significant.
I kind of started digging in a little bit and started doing some research into the Florida system, which has several factors that make it unique. And I don't know, I just kind of fell down a rabbit hole. I couldn't really pull out of it once I started digging in. And so I started blogging. And through that blog and through kind of immersing myself in looking at the death penalty system, I found out about the One for Ten Project, and they were looking for people. And so I got in touch with them, and here we are.
Thanks to the use of crowdfunding, the project received enough financial backing to become a reality. Earlier this spring, Megan and three of her colleagues loaded up into an RV they named Tina and spent 5 weeks traveling more than 5,000 miles across the U.S. interviewing 10 death row exonerees.
We would spend a day filming and do our interview and film some B-roll. Then we would get in the RV and drive to wherever we were going to spend the night that night, usually a KOA, sometimes a state park. And while one person was driving, the other three would start transcribing the interview so that in the morning we could start editing and we would have a transcript to work from. So then the next day we would edit all day long and sometimes late into the night, and then we would have the film finished by the time we went to bed. We'd get up and upload it the next morning and then drive on to the next interview.
Megan explains wanting to make the project interactive for the audience is one of the reasons for the quick turnaround. The crew wanted viewers to be engaged and feel like they were on the journey too. Megan says they wanted the audience to be able to see a film, respond to it, offer feedback, and suggest questions for the next interviewee. Crew members found their interview subjects by working with Witness to Innocence, an organization composed of, by, and for exonerated death row survivors and their loved ones. The group helped the filmmakers find people who were willing to share their story. Each film focuses on a different aspect of being a death row exoneree. The story of Joe D'Ambrosio, for example, shines a light on what life is like after exoneration.
I was on death row for 22 years. I was locked up for 24 years. The Berlin Wall came down. The World Trade Center happened. I lost my sister, my mom, many aunts and uncles, cousins. A lot of them died off when I was in. My sister came down with leukemia, my oldest sister. And we wanted to see if I was going to be a bone marrow match. So I wrote the prison asking if we could do this. They wrote me back and said, "You're a dead man." No. In my eyes, the state murdered her. By putting me on death row for a crime I didn't commit, I couldn't save my sister's life, and she died at the age of 49.
Producer Megan Garner says the story of what happens afterward is so compelling and something that you don't always think about. Even if someone was exonerated because of the internet, people could find out about his or her time in jail, and things like dating, getting a loan or a job, and finding a place to live could become difficult. One of Megan's favorite films tells the story of Damon Thibodeau, which addresses the issue of false confessions.
A lot of people think that you would never confess to a crime that you didn't commit. And Damon says, you know, Damon said the same thing. He said, I never thought that I would confess to something I didn't do. But when they put you in a room and they tell you about, you know, what happens when you're executed, and they tell you that they know it was you, and no one's vouching for you. And, you know, he said, I said anything that I could say to make it stop. So I think it's a really compelling story, and I really like sharing it with people.
Although production has wrapped, effects of the project are still being felt. The website 1for10.com features all 10 films, a map with information about the death penalty in each state, and graphs displaying a variety of information from the race of exonerees to the number of executions per year since 1976, the year the death penalty was reinstated in the U.S. The series of documentary films has been accepted to a handful of festivals, and it recently won Best Web Series at Raindance Film Festival's WebFest. The next step for the project is to create a feature-length documentary investigating the criminal justice system through the lens of the death penalty. For now, Megan hopes people will use the films in whatever way they find useful. Earlier this week, she returned to Arkansas to discuss the films and says she hopes people will be more aware of issues surrounding the death penalty and have more discussions about it.
I think that 142 people being locked up who shouldn't have been locked up that's major. That's major. And the damage is ongoing. I mean, it's not like they get out and they put their life back together. You know, the damage is something that they carry around with them. They have PTSD, they can't date, they have trouble finding jobs. It's just something that alters the course of their lives, and I think that that's important, and it's horrific, and we shouldn't be okay with it. So our justice system is not operating as it should. And I think that as a journalist, it's my role to kind of bring attention to that and to try to hold our government accountable to follow, you know, the Constitution. So that's why I think that this is so important.
For more information on this project, you can visit 1for10.com. To read Megan's blog, you can visit punishablebydeath.wordpress.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, November 1st, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Halloween is not over.
Well, that's what happens when it falls in the middle of the week, right?
Right. It is not
extended.
Over. But I have a great Halloween option for you and a little Chinese carryout.
Okay. Let's do the Halloween first, if you don't mind.
Well, it's actually part of the theater option.
Oh, okay.
And you know what it is.
I do.
Zombie High School Homecoming.
Arts Live.
A new script by a 17-year-old junior in high school.
Who's an Arts Live
I guess alum.
Would you say alum?
Well, he's still there.
You're right.
His name is Reed Carson, and the show is hysterical. And there are performances at 7 o'clock today and tomorrow and 2 o'clock Sunday at the Arts Live Theater on Sang Avenue in Fayetteville. And tickets are $6 to $8, so you can wrap up your Halloween
there you go.
With a little zombie fun.
All right.
What was it he said? I asked him why zombies instead of vampires. He said, because vampires are stupid and zombies are cool.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah.
You can also go see No Sex, Please, We're British.
ACO.
A British farce about newlyweds who have a problem with their mail orders.
Right.
And I mean a real problem
right.
with their mail orders. 7:30 today and tomorrow at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. Tickets are $20, and this is the last weekend. But it's the first weekend of a French farce. Don't Dress for Dinner. Mm-hmm. Remember when Theater Square did Boeing Boeing?
Yeah.
It's a story about a swinging bachelor who couldn't be happier because he's got a flat in Paris and three gorgeous stewardesses.
So this is in the 1960s again?
It's a sequel, more or less.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's later. And Bernard is married to Jacqueline, but he's still out catting around.
Mm.
Don't Dress for Dinner is at Rogers Little Theater. Here's the synopsis. Don't even try to follow along. Yeah. Bernard is having an affair with Suzanne.
Okay.
He doesn't know Suzanne is having an affair with his best friend, Robert. Mm-hmm. They all end up, or rather his wife, I'm sorry, his wife, Jacqueline, is having an affair with his best friend, Robert. See, I'm already confused. They all end up at the country house together, and you can just imagine what happens.
It sounds like something Peter Lawford should be in.
Exactly.
Yes.
8 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Sunday, and again next weekend at Rogers Little Theater, there is a dinner option. Tickets are $10 to $17 for balcony seating or $48 with dinner.
All right.
Music, big music weekend. Audra McDonald.
At the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith.
You might not know the name, but you should know the street creds. She won her first Tony for Best Actress for Carousel in 1994. Mm-hmm. She won her second Tony for Terrence McNally's Masterclass in 1996.
Okay.
Her third Tony for Ragtime in 1998. And all this happened before she was 30 years old.
She's a thrice Tony winner.
Oh, no, she's got two more.
Oh, wow.
The Raisin in the Sun and Porgy and Bess.
Holy cow.
She's got two Grammys. She was on TV in Having Our Say, the Delaney Sisters' First 100 Years, which I loved. She's been in Law & Order SVU and Private Practice, and now she's on tour to promote her new album, Go Back Home.
And she will be in Fort Smith.
The concert is at 7:30 today at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center, and tickets are $55, which is a heck of a bargain. The Austin Lounge Lizards. In town tonight at George's.
They are so fun. I saw them when they came to Mike Shirky's house on Block Street, I think it was 20, maybe close to 20 years ago.
Kevin Kinder, our music writer, calls them musical satirists.
That's apropos.
And they have their first album in 7 years called Home and Deranged.
Which tells you everything you need to know about the Lizards.
8 o'clock tonight. It's actually not at George's. I was wrong. It's at the 324 Ballroom.
Right, 327 Ballroom.
Behind Jose's. Mm-hmm. And admission is $20. And the Eli Young Band is in town tonight and tomorrow night. They're at George's, which explains the brain disconnect. Shows are at 9 o'clock, and tickets are $25. And our third category is outdoors.
Should be a nice weekend, right? I think the last time
it's supposed to be a beautiful weekend. And Farmland Adventures is still open. Another Halloween
autumnal.
Autumnal.
Autumnal sort of thing.
It's a lovely word. They have a corn maze, a petting zoo, a pumpkin patch, wagon and pony rides, 3 to 9:30 today and 10 to 9:30 tomorrow at 5355 Parsons Road in Springdale. Events cost $6 to $9.
Not bad.
And you can find out more at farmlandadventures@cox.net by emailing. It's the girls' only backpack weekend at Devil's Den. Mm-hmm. Starts at 10 o'clock tomorrow and ends at noon on Sunday. You can call 761-3325 to see if any spots remain in that. And six times a year, the Sugar Creek Astronomical Society has classes and night viewings at Hobbs State Park, and tomorrow is one of them.
And from what I understand, astronomically, this is a pretty interesting weekend. If the sky cooperates, there are all sorts of things you can see between naked eye, binocular, and the telescopes that they provide.
Exactly.
You can just show up.
Exactly.
They do bring a lawn chair, a flashlight, and for some reason, like a red balloon or a red cloth to cover the
flight. Yeah, it has something to do with,
Okay.
I know they say you can see Venus, Uranus, Neptune, the Andromeda Galaxy, which sounds very Star Trek-y, and M31, which is the other name for the Andromeda Galaxy, is similar in structure to our own.
Uh-huh.
I'm now talking out my ear completely, but I know that the beginner's class starts at 5:30 on Saturday, and if I could turn the page, I'd tell you that at 6:30 is the viewing, and you can find out more at 789-5000.
And how much does that all cost?
Oh, that's all free.
There you go.
And one critter event. On Sunday, Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge is going to open the new habitat for Bam Bam.
Their bear that
their
they
grizzly
rescued.
Bear. And you have to pay regular admission, which is $10 to $15, but you can see Bam Bam celebrate his new habitat.
And from what they say, it's they think the first time this bear has really had grass under his feet.
Which is pretty amazing when you think about it. It's a very cool place.
I will watch the grizzly bear from afar, however. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night beginning at 10 p.m. On the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, I will feature music, particularly jazz music, from around the world. From South America, we'll hear from Eliana Elias, and from Panama, Danilo Perez. From Israel, Anat Cohen. We'll also hear some standard jazz selections, including Hampton Hawes, Coleman Hawkins, and the Clayton Brothers. All this and more Friday on Shades of Jazz.
This is Ozarks at Large. Every musician has to get their start somewhere. For Priscilla Dawn White, a junior and theater major at the University of Arkansas, her first official show is scheduled for tomorrow at the Springtown Barn, which is located near Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport. Earlier this week, Priscilla stopped by Studio 123. During her visit, she explained she's been trying to focus more on her music this year. And in addition to her theater knowledge, she also has a background in music.
I started out in back in high school, and before that, I used to play trumpet and French horn, and so I was like very much into band. And I quit that just to have more time for theater. But I kept up with music by playing guitar and singing. I was in choir for a long time, so it just slowly transitioned into writing my own music and that kind of thing. And I've been writing music for a while, but it's only been more recently that I've been actually playing it for people and trying to get it out there. So,
do you remember your first show?
This coming show is actually my first like official gig.
Okay.
But I did play at the last Saturday event in this, on the square here in Fayetteville, in the Fayetteville Underground, the art gallery over there. So that was fun. I played for about 10 minutes over there. This time I'm going to be playing closer to an hour and a half. So,
an hour and a half by yourself?
Yeah.
Is that a little daunting?
It is. I've been very, very careful, like rehearsing and everything, going over my set list, making sure I have enough, and kind of trying to think of what I'm going to say in between songs, you know, some banter in there. So that's been kind of interesting because I've never had to play for that much time. I've gone and I've done some busking out on the Bentonville Square this past summer, and that was pretty fun. And I would play for about an hour, but in that kind of setting, you can kind of get away with repeating a song or two. So this is, it's about 20 songs, so it should be pretty fun.
I know you're familiar with the written word because you were involved or are still involved with poetry slams and things like that. Is that helpful to you, you know, your grasp of the written word when writing songs?
Yeah, I would think so. Because I think some people, when they're writing songs, don't often take into account making sure that they make sense grammatically even. I know I actually almost got a internship at a sound studio in Eureka Springs at Winterwood, I believe is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
I had written all these essays and everything, and I know one of his things that he talked about on his service that he provides to, you know, listen to songs and tell you how to improve and all that, was making sure that the actual words make sense grammatically and all this stuff. Like, you don't want pronoun confusion, things like that. So understanding just, like, I guess English helps. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm kind of a grammar nerd, and things like that, you know, just tend to help. So
so do you start with lyrics first or music?
Actually, often it's simultaneous.
Mm-hmm.
I know most of the songs I write that I actually like the most have been songs that I just started strumming something and I'd start humming something and then a lyric would kind of pop into my head and I'd kind of build on that and work on it. And a lot of times the finished song is basically what came out the first time I played it. So That's always pretty fun when that happens. Doesn't happen enough, but when it does, it's really nice.
Where does your inspiration for your songs come from? Because you seem like a very creative person, because I know you helped paint some of the Pigsivition Pigs.
Yes.
And, or at least one of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're involved with the Poetry Slam, and you're in theater, and you also are a musician, so you're a very creative person.
Yeah.
Where does your inspiration for your songs come from?
It depends on the song. Sometimes, you know, it'll just be like, I'll have a great day or, you know, a great experience or something, and I just want to sit and play music, and I'll just start playing something, and, you know, I'll hear something I really like, and it all comes from kind of like what I'm feeling at the moment. So a lot of my songs are actually kind of melancholy, which is funny because I'm not too often a melancholy person. Mm-hmm. But I'm very, like, I love, you know, rainy weather and stuff like that, you know, and fall and winter is my favorite, so maybe that's where that kind of comes from. I also really love kind of the chord structures of more, like, melancholy songs. I feel like they're kind of interesting, like they have a little bit of a twist to them, so.
Well, you've brought your instruments with you. You mind playing us a song?
Sure. I'm going to get my guitar out.
Okay.
So. This song, it's actually the first full song I ever wrote, and it was one of those songs that I just sat down and it just kind of came out. So it hasn't really changed since then. I wrote it the summer before I came to college, so it's an older song, but I still really enjoy playing it. It's called, tentatively, Shelter. So, yeah. Storm, I need a place.
So you wrote that song before coming to college. Is it different coming back to that song now, having been in college for a couple of years?
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny because I'm wondering, like, where did that even come from? Like, in high school, like, I don't know. Most of the stuff I'd written before that was just awful stuff that is on a long forgotten, never to be found again MySpace page. So it was just kind of interesting how this song just kind of came together. And I think it was kind of, you know, I was pulling on this imagery that I didn't really quite understand at the time. And so I'm glad I wrote it down, and I'm glad I recorded it and remember it. Because I think back then I might have thought it was, you know, too weird or whatever. So now that's still one of my favorite songs to play, so.
Well, you're going to be playing a bunch of your own songs at this show on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I about a month ago was contacted by Eddie Balick, who is the one who he owns the barn that this event is going to take place in, and he throws this event basically on a yearly basis, is what I understand. And he left me a voicemail, and he was like, hey, you don't know me, but one of my staff showed me your music on SoundCloud, and I was charmed. So he invited me to play, and I've been super excited since then, so I'm really, just really excited for the show.
All right, so it's going to be you and Heirloom, who we've had on mm-hmm. the show before,
yes.
and another musician?
Mm-hmm. It should be really awesome. She is actually playing a traditional Chinese instrument. Her name is Zixuan Zhou, and I guess she also goes by Lola. So, but it should be really cool. I've never heard her play, but Eddie seems really excited for everyone that's going to be performing.
Awesome. And it's at the Springtown Barn, and mm-hmm. it's actually on his property, or he owns the barn. Is that correct?
Yes. He said that he's owned the barn, and he's been there for about 20 years.
Okay.
And the barn is actually located towards XNA. I believe he said that it's 9 miles west of the south entrance. To XNA, mm-hmm. or 3 miles east of the junction on Highway 59 and 12 in Gentry. But yeah, he's owned the barn for 20 years. He says it was built in 1924, and it was kind of an ongoing restoration project.
Oh.
So he's been doing shows in there since 2009 when he finished the loft where, you know, everyone sits and we perform. And at the first concert, they had Shannon Wurst and Threepenny Acre. So that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And the physical address, if somebody wants to, I guess, plug it into their GPS, is 1258 Clyde Edwards Road in Springtown, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. So people can find it that way. And then let's see, there's a $12 cover, a potluck at 6, and the show starts at 7. And you can wear a costume and maybe win a prize.
Yeah, it should be fun. So far, everyone that I know that's going is wearing a costume. So
excellent. It's kind of one of those weird Halloweens where it's on a Thursday, so you're not
yeah.
sure what weekend to celebrate. So if you
exactly.
celebrated last weekend, want to celebrate again, here's another way to do
yeah.
it.
And it's actually taking place on one of the Days of the Dead, too. So
there you
it's
go.
Kind of just going to be an overall kind of spooky event. So should be really fun.
What are you most looking forward to about your first official show?
Just kind of getting there and doing it. Because I've been wanting for a while to kind of figure out how to get a gig, or, you know, mm-hmm. how to get out and play, other than, you know, just doing open mics and stuff, which are still great. And I guess this will just kind of push me to keep looking for more and more ways to get out and perform.
Well, you also have a ukulele here.
I do.
Would you like to play us a song on that?
Sure. All right. So this song that I wrote on the ukulele is actually the first song I wrote on the ukulele, because I've only had this thing for about a month. And it was just one of those songs that I just kind of wrote immediately. It just kind of came out. It's a much happier song. I think it's pretty cute. It's really hard to write a sad song on the ukulele, I found so far. So this song, I call it Validation. And it's really fun and light, so here. Yeah.
questions you want to know. Why can't I sing every song in my head? Little fawn, little fawn, little fawn, we all need some validation. Have no fear or trepidation.
That was Priscilla Dawn White inside Studio 123 earlier this week. She will perform tomorrow night along with Heirloom and Zixuan Zhou at the Springtown Barn, which is located at 1258 Clyde Edwards Road in Springtown, Arkansas. A potluck is scheduled for 6 o'clock and the show starts at 7. There is a $12 cover charge. More information is available by calling 479-769-2067 or by emailing Eddie Ballack, that's E-D-D-Y-B-A-L-L-U-C-K, at hotmail.com. For more information about Priscilla, you can visit soundcloud.com/Priscilla-at-dawn.
The NSA has done it now. Sure, go ahead and listen to everybody's phone calls. We're all texting anyway. But now they've spied on Google, and Google is mad. Hope you like Duluth, NSA guys, because that's where Google Maps is sending you every time. I'm Peter Sagal. We're inviting everybody but the NSA to listen into this week's show. Wait, wait, don't tell me. From NPR.
Wait, wait, don't tell me. Tomorrow morning at 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Thanks to everyone who called or went online to donate to KUAF during our fall on-air fundraiser. If you did miss out, you can still make a pledge or a donation at our website. Just go to supportkuaf.com. It is the support of KUAF listeners that makes public radio possible. So thanks again to everyone who made a contribution during our just-completed on-air fundraiser.
Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays. 277-8493 or facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information.
Halloween is over.
It is. Well, I mean, there's still a couple of things
this
weekend that you could go to. So.
Right. As Becca mentioned, that Arts Live. And, but the official
date
has moved on.
Yes. Last night. Celebrated last night.
And you are like an Olympian when it comes to Halloween because you, for work, you
thank
were,
you.
For work, you were Dorothy
from
The Wizard of Oz.
I was.
And then after work, you changed and you were something else.
Yes. I was Poison Ivy, like from Batman.
Mm-hmm.
That was from... this is a costume I made for a villains-themed party my friends had last Friday.
Right.
And then when we were talking about dressing up at work, we talked about having the theme of Wizard of Oz, and so I wanted to be with the theme.
Right.
You gotta keep in theme.
Yes. So it's just impressive that in like the course of 8 hours, you had two costumes, and I was nothing. I
You had a hat?
I did
you
have
were,
a hat.
You were a Tin Man?
I wanted to be Tin Man, but couldn't be for various reasons. I do think I eventually ended up looking like Steve Douglas from My Three Sons, the Fred McMurray character. Okay, anyway.
I've heard of it. I don't know what that looks like, but
yeah,
you.
Basically,
okay.
Exactly.
I love looking at people's costumes. It seems like mixing stuff together was kind of part of a thing. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who wanted to get a t-shirt for like Tony the Tiger or something like that and find like a knife and go as a serial killer.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Things like that. There was a guy I saw out last night because I went to the Dixon Street Pub Crawl, which I think this was the first one they did. I did not go to all of the places, though I had friends who did, and they rightfully earned a free t-shirt.
Oh, good.
But there was one guy who would mix something together, a Jaeger bomber. Mm-hmm. So used little, like,
bottles of the
of alcohol
liqueur.
And
yes. Mm-hmm,
to make the bomb on his chest.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Creative.
There you go. Well, so now you have 365 days to think about next year's
absolutely
outfit and
absolutely
costume.
I'm already thinking about it.
I know you are. Uh-huh. I know you are. Tomorrow, Arkansas football. It's the on-campus finale against Auburn. But tonight at 8:30 at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale, mm-hmm. Arkansas hockey hosting Alabama. They play at 8:30 tonight. They'll also skate at 4 tomorrow afternoon.
Is that the first game of the season? No, they've been playing for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I had to think about it for a minute.
This is a big one, so go Ice Hogs, beat Bama.
Absolutely.
I don't have to stay neutral on that, do I? I can root against Alabama hockey.
I feel like that's okay. I feel like that's acceptable.
Very good. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Eureka Springs. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Join Christina Thomas and myself Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large.